Good morning, my presentation on integration of genomics and crop modeling for prediction of complex traits. First, I want to make a review on CoTR GWAS, genomic wide association study, genomic selection, genomic prediction, and then integration across biological scales, and also integration of genomics and crop modeling, and then also look at the prediction of these two phenomena for rice as an example for the scenario based prediction for rice. And then I have a brief discussion on the model upgrading and the challenges. Over the past three decades, microseed selection has made a major contribution in, selecting, quantitative traits that are controlled by major genes. So for example, semi-dwarfness, disease resistance, cooking quantity, but has limited success in terms of the quantitative traits that are controlled by, many genes with minor effects like, green yield and leaf area index. Over the past, two decades, with the progress of the genomic sequence, we have seen an explosion of literature on genome-wide association studies. Basically, you can pretty much do an association study for any traits at any level of biological organization. And CoTR and GWAS are folks trying to focus on pinpoint the specific genes or markers, that control the trait. On a different aspect of the genomic selection, the focus is not on identifying individual genes. Their focus is on the overall performance of the genotype. This is a quite different approach. Genomic prediction is kind of extension of the genomic selection. It actually tries to predict the performance of any traits or even some of the model parameters based on the genomic information. As is well known, there are two major limitations for the CoTR and also GWAS analysis. One is basically no association, and also the CoTR consistency across the environments. These are the main reason because most the CoTR analysis and also GWAS are mainly kind of a statistical correlations, and also they have a limitation in separating genetic control from environmental modification, and also they do not have a critical time component. It's basically they cannot account for the life history of crop growth and development processes. As a result, it's kind of a black box. So basically, it's not capability for component trait integration, and also not capability for integration across biological scales. You can do GWAS on many different traits, but you cannot predict the performance of a combination of traits with GWAS analysis. This is a chart of showing basically across biological organization, from the genetics all the way to, to the Gorgon plant population and ecosystem. So for the genomics information is here, at the bottom. But for most, breeding and crop modeling, we are most of the organ, plant, and population levels. So there's a big gap in terms of this biological organization. So this is a black box. For most system biologists, they are focused on this subcellular process. For crop modeling, we are more focused on this, organ, plant, and population areas. So there is a big gap that needs to be integrated in order to be effectively integrated crop modeling with genetics. There have been pioneer work on gene-based crop modeling. The most pioneer work was done by Jeff Veit and also Gary Hockenbaum in 1996. After that, there were a number of applications basically integrating genes into crop models. And in the past 3 to 4 years, this one was examples, the old people are using, genomic prediction, to estimate the crop parameters and then to do the projections, integrate genes in the crop models. But we think there's more that can be done. We think, there's a need for basically a decomposition of complex trees. This decomposition process basically achieves the separation of genetic control from environmental modifications. And as a result, basically, once we decompose, we separate, and now the crop model acting as the integrator, it integrates the processes. So you decompose, you separate G interaction, and then when you integrate it, you integrate the G interactions. So I will use the rice PSM, rice population simulation model as an example. Basically, we use just these two phenomena in rice PSM. It's basically a model output. It is controlled by six major parameters. One is maximum production rate, or node production rate, but node production rate is also controlled by maximum production rate. This one is more closer to the genetics. Another one is probably node of particle differentiation. Under those stress conditions, also for those rice cultures without, food period sensitivity, you pretty much see particle initiation at a certain number of nodes, number 14, 15 for most rice cultivars. So this noodle, primary noodle penetrative fishing, is more closer to the genetic. So you compare to this to flowering, so we're getting closer and closer to the genetic, you know, to narrow the gap between the phenotype and the genes. Some of the other trees I'm going to skip it, but generally idea is based on we try to decompose the trees across this biological scale, and then we can get closer to the genetics for the trees we want to analyze. Alright, I'll use an example for these two flowering for rice. This is a data set from Michael Dinkelman, obtained from area. For this site, basically we just included, so this data set included three sites, 10 pounding days, five generic groups, and also we have 169 genotypes. Each genotype has 700,000 SNPs. We use 135 for calibration, you know, 34 for validation. We have a presentation tomorrow by Tony on the same subject, so I'm going to skip some of the details in my presentation. So tomorrow morning, we're in the same session by Tony. So these are just the GOS results for four treatments, for four different treatments, you know, in two different locations. If you look at the GOS Manhattan plot, basically, you know, there's not much correlation. You know, I was explaining when there was a general pattern between different, you know, Manhattan plots for different treatments. But you can see, you don't see very many. And then we can do that another way. If we use one of the treatments as a reference and compare the how many markers are shared between different treatments, here if you look at even first 5,000 SNPs, you can see the best one we have only over 18% shared markers. So this means you can see there is wide variation if you do a GOS analysis, use different data sets for different treatments. So if you look at that in another way, basically I can order the markers in terms of the node score from the most, from the largest to the smallest. So this is the distribution of all the markers in our analysis. So this one we use about 400,000. And then if this is expanded, we want to look at the first 1,000, the most significant markers, the markers with the highest node score. So you can see basically there are only about a few hundred markers that have higher node score values. And then we do the genomic prediction using these markers. You know, this one just for these two fluorines, so dynamic prediction, predict these two fluorines for using the marker we have done basically. I ordered the marker based on the node score, and then we use the most significant markers. So the next selection is a base 10. So this one means I have 10 markers, most significant one. So in this one, I expect about 4%, 40% variability. You know, R-squared is about 40%. But if I use, you know, two, this two means, you know, 100, because two base 10. So I get about R-squared is about 0.9. This means that with about 100 markers, you get a pretty good prediction in terms of these two flowering. But if you add more markers to your regression, actually you are going down. So this means you are using less markers in this case is even have a better R-squared values. This was basically for all the sites and the plant, so in this combined data set. So this software can allow us to do this genomic prediction in one single step. But we also look at the individuals individual treatment, but the trend is very similar. Basically, you know, the number of markers that give you the highest R-square value is about a few hundred. So what we have done, basically, we only have the observed data for these two flowering, so we use the optimization process to estimate the six parameters we have discussed. Basically, we try to minimize the difference between the observed these two flowering and produced these two flowering from rice BSM, so we estimate the six parameters. And so once we have these six parameters, and then we can coordinate the parameter to the SNP values. So this is the basic the validation data set for the six parameters. I'm going to show you this NS is called a Nash shot efficiency. This one actually is a better indicator than some of the other ones, you know, Pearson R square. You know, when the sample size is they are very big, these two, you know, the Pearson and NS is about the same. But sample size is small, you know, NS actually is very smaller, but it's better indicator. It's account for the variability, you know, percentage of variability in the models. So for these six parameters, model parameters are tied to these two flowering. So basically, we on average put about 0.8% R square, 80% are accounted for by the regression with the SNP based parameters. Once we are done with the SNP-based parameters, now we can we plug this parameter into this rice population simulation model, and we predicted the performance of, you know, these two flowering for this genotype. So this is actually the we are ensuring the validation data set for the 34 accessions. So the top figure is basically the Pearson's R square. You know, but our focus on this one is not Schottky efficiency, because this is the R square that account for percentage variability. So we arranged basically the all accessions from the highest one with the highest R square to the lowest R square. But you can see about 20 out of 34 genotypes, you know, the R square is relatively high. But for about 10 of the genotypes, the R square is negative. This means the projection is not very good. One of the reasons may be because, you know, we didn't measure some of the traits, you know, like the nodal punctal diffusion, you know, max nodal production rate. We were just using the optimization procedure to estimate it. So if we have measured those traits and then using those traits to regression against the SNPs, we might have get better values. The other one may be because, you know, this model has limitation in terms of the decomposition. You know, maybe some other parameters we have not considered in our simulations. So there's more work that needs to be done for this analysis. So I think that for further model improvement, we can think, you know, we need to steer further drill down across these biological scales, further decomposition of component traits, and also we need to increase integration across biological scales. I think that for most of the current couple models, you probably, you know, only have basically involved three levels. Basically, you have organ, you have plant, and population. For most crop models, that's three levels of in your system. But a lot of the crop models, I think there was a paper just recently, basically you can say, you know, most crop models can do a pretty good job at the prediction of crop year, predict crop year. But I think they have a limitation in integrating, you know, with genomics. Because it doesn't have the capability to drill down these biological scales. At least for the, you know, the rest population simulation model we are using right now, we can drill down. We have to make a structural change in order to account for some of the decomposition process. I think this also apply to a lot of other models. And also with if you add a new narrow biological scale, you add a new set of parameters. And the other is the parameter estimation. It's a major challenge. Is, you know, these two phenomena is one of the traits relatively easy to measure. But there are other traits like, you know, nodal punctal differentiation, max nodal production rate. Those are much more time consuming to measure it, you know, and to estimate it. So I think within the, you know, phenotyping, you know, those traits that are really important to crop modeling, a very, very big challenge. For some of the traits you cannot measure it, you have to use optimization. And also the parameter need to have biological meanings. You know, because those parameters are linked to the SNPs. So I think, you know, in terms of the model upgrade improvement, there are a lot of challenges that need to be done. I think this is an area that has a lot of potential, you know, to truly provide the integration of, you know, genomics into the crop modeling, you know, to provide a, you know, performance for in terms of the improve the performance of the model prediction for the breeding and also for performance of variety evaluation under different environment. Thank you very much for your attention. Yes.
It's time for questions.
Yes, Jeff.
Yes, Jeff.
First of all, that's a very, very, very interesting piece of work. My big question, a similar question I posed to the group in Florida, where they did something similar to this with a single population.
Yes.
Why don't you start with what's known from more sort of functional genomics and genetics about major loci that affect phenology, rather than going straight to a big statistical analysis?
I think a lot of the traits we are interested for in terms of the crop modeling purposes, you know, are not controlled by major genes. You just look at the, you know, food pair sensitivity. Okay, there are two major parameters. One is the, you know, critical food pair. There are a number of genes controlled by that one. But a lot of other traits from modeling purposes, you know, they are kind of quantitative traits. We really can't get to the, you know, individual nodes. We do have the option, you know, to, if we know this nodes that control this trait, and then we can do a regression, we can incorporate them. I think you can incorporate different levels of, you know, of resolution. I know this loci, we can incorporate into the model. If we have the traits, but the model has to have that parameter or the traits into your system. For the ones we don't have it, we have to do the genomic prediction because we don't know. It's because they are controlled by many, many genes. You're right. I think for the one we know, we can incorporate it. But this will depend on the model structures.